Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 144. This week we're talking about the Buffy the Vampire Slayer episodes of season one titled Out of Mind, Out of Sight, and Prophecy Girl, which is the season one finale. We made it, guys. We're at the end of season one. It's all uphill from here, according to some people. I personally like season one a lot. So before we get into talking about the episodes, my name is Selena, and our panel of hosts this week are fan, super fan, Caitlin, and newbies, Brittany and Kristen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm so glad to be talking Buffy with you guys because I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of fun with these couple of episodes. Before we start talking about them, just want to remind you of the contact information as always. If you want to get in touch with us about this or any other episode of Rewatchable, you can email us rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us @re_watchable. And you can find us on hypable.com, which is hypable.com under the podcast section. And of course, we also have a Tumblr for this podcast at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So you can use any of those ways to send us your thoughts about Buffy and about our podcast. Just make sure that you don't spoil because, as we said, there are newbies on the show that haven't seen the show before. So we want to keep them out of the loop, essentially, which is always fun. So before we... that's like the third time I've said that. Before we start talking about the episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, let's just introduce ourselves with some fun facts. Caitlin, why don't you go first?
Okay. So not really a fun fact, but I've been bedridden all week with a pinched nerve in my back.
Oh, that's not fun. That's awful.
No. And really nothing I'm doing is alleviating it. So I've been sitting in bed all week.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's like making us all sad. I don't know how to move on from that.
Sorry for bringing everything down.
That's it. The show's over, guys. I can't. Okay, well, Kristen, do you have something to cheer us up?
Yeah, Kristen didn't prepare a fun fact.
No.
So we're like just searching around my room for something that sounds kind of fun. I started watching Big Bang Theory season 8 last night because I don't typically watch it when it's on. I watch that like after the seasons come out on DVD. So I got it for Christmas and I hadn't had time to start it. So I started it yesterday and it's really good fun so far.
Oh, cool. And Brittany, how about you?
I am currently sitting in the, 31 inches of snow. The blizzard was not just a hype here on the East Coast. It happened. It snowed for 26 hours. And yeah, so that's what we're dealing with here. Hopefully everyone will be able to get to work and shovel out, but it's beautiful today. Absolutely gorgeous. So yeah, looking at a lot of snow.
That's fun. So I guess I'll continue the trend of making my fun fact Buffy themed. This was actually something I was going to bring on the last episode I was on. I've only been on two podcast episodes this season, which was that a lot of female guest stars on the first season of Buffy have actually auditioned for the role of Buffy. So they were sort of given guest parts to make up for the fact that they didn't get the lead role, which is kind of humorous. One of them was in the episode The Witch, and it was the girl who played Amy. I believe her name is Elizabeth Ann Allen. Another one was in this episode, which is why it's kind of relevant, and it was the girl who played Harmony called Mercedes McNabb. And the third one, you know very well because it's Charisma Carpenter who played Cordelia. She was originally up for the role of Buffy, and Sarah Michelle Gellar was up for the role of Cordelia. And they ended up switching roles and keeping them, which I think is kind of interesting if you guys didn't know that. So we are finally at the point of talking about the episodes of Buffy as we have been leading up to all this time. The first episode is episode 11 of season 1, Out of Mind, Out of Sight. So first of all, I want to read the synopsis written by Mitch, which is important when I get into the synopsis, why it's written by Mitch. It says, in this episode, Willow wears a Scooby-Doo shirt and Cordelia dates someone with the most attractive name ever. Mitch is a hunk. He has the girl, the looks, the buds, and a V-line dreams are made of. Unfortunately, Invisible Marcy doesn't appreciate Mitch's perfection, so she beats him to a bloody pulp. As Cordelia's friend is pushed down the stairs, Buffy figures out that the attacker is targeting Cordelia's crew. After discovering the identity of the ghost, Buffy and Cordelia are anesthetized. That was a mean word to give me, Mitch. Thanks for that. And tied up while Giles, Willow, Xander are trapped in a room filling with toxic gas. Never fear, the FBI is here. The agents take Marcy away as Angel saves Giles and company. Cordelia nearly redeems herself, but then realizes that she'd much rather hang out with Mitch than anyone else in the whole world. Can't say I blame her. So that's our very Mitch-themed synopsis for Out of Mind, Out of Sight. What did you guys think about this episode, first of all?
I really liked it. I especially loved, like, just the, you know, how it played into, like, the title so well. It was like, This wasn't, like, so much that we were looking for a ghost, but, like, something actually happened. And, you know, like, this was a real girl who can, like, you can actually bump into. And it wasn't just, like, a phantom, like, playing around with the students. And I particularly loved the ending. I didn't, like, I was like, what is going on? Then all of a sudden I'm like, you know, this makes so much sense in this, like, universe that, like, it's not just the Hellmouth that, like, it's, like, this is something that's happening all over the place. And I like how they kind of, like, blew that little hole into the whole wider world surrounding this town. So that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Yeah, I liked it. The whole, like, they're just invisible because they were ignored thing is a little weird. Like, I wanted a reason or some creep, you know, totally strange reason why this poor girl is the one who turned invisible, because this happens at every high school, you know, all over the place. And then we got to the end and there's a whole bunch of kids and I'm like, okay, what is happening? So yeah, like, I kind of wish there was a little more of a supernatural reason for it, but I liked the content of the episode. Like, I liked what was going on with her being invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, this episode definitely is not my favorite. I think, honestly, it's one of my least favorites of the entire show for rewatchability. There are definitely episodes that are technically a lot worse that I enjoy a lot more than this particular one, but there were a lot of parts that I do enjoy, and especially all the Cordelia stuff that we'll get into talking about this week. I really like that. I hate Marcy, though. I hate her. I don't know why. There's no reason. I just don't like her.
I was going to say that this episode sort of plays into something we talked about on a recent episode of Buffy and Company having to deal with human adversaries, and that, you know, it's a completely different type of fight that they have to have when their enemy is human, because when it's a monster, they have the black and white, we kill the monster for the most part. But when it's human, they have to take a completely different approach. So even though she's got this invisibility thing, she's still at her core as a human. So it changes the dynamic in an interesting way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, which I think is partly explains the FBI ex machina at the end, which, again, we'll get into talking about that. But so, Brittany, you kind of alluded to the title of this episode being really, really nicely done. And I agree. It's like my favorite part is the title, basically, how they sort of reverse that out of sight, out of mind, and make it out of mind, out of sight. And I can never, like, they're so close together that my mind always mixes them up back. So it always confuses me when I see that title, but I think it's very well done. The first discussion point we have in our doc, also courtesy of our Mitch, is of course about the Mitch in the show, because apparently having a character with your name in the show is is something you can't really get over. I wouldn't know, because no one's ever named Selena. So Marcy, the invisible girl, one of the first acts that she sort of does or commits is the brutal attack on Mitch in the locker room, which our Mitch, it's going to get confusing, brings up was a little bit, like, dark. It was very brutal. And I think that's actually a really interesting point. This was a very dark episode. And this probably has a lot to do with, like you said, Caitlin, the fact that Marcy is not a creature, you know, she's not a demon, she's just a girl, she's just extremely violent and evil. I think Buffy even says that at one point.
Yeah, and I mean, can you blame her when she was
literally ignored to the point of invisibility. Like,
I don't know. Can you blame her for attacking someone with a bat?
can you blame her anger?
Right, right. Of course. Of course. And I think that's funny about Marcy is that, I mean, yeah, she is horrible and she is a really, like, evil person, but it is kind of a nice twist to that trope of, like, the poor, ignored girl. She doesn't turn around. She doesn't do the right thing. She doesn't prove that she's the one, you know, with the heart of gold. She's just, like, it's just turned her bitter and mean, and suddenly she's the villain. And, like, as I said, like, the fact that Buffy brings that up later, she was, like, she actually felt sorry for her. But she's just a psycho. Like, what do you do? It's a very interesting dilemma.
It kind of plays into the whole thing of not all people who, or most people who commit horrible crimes were abused, but not all people who are abused commit horrible crimes. Mm-hmm. So Marcy kind of falls into the former category of being poorly treated. So she kind of continues the cycle of violence, which is unfortunately pretty common, but that doesn't, it's a reason for her actions, but it's not an excuse. So right. We don't have to be like, oh, poor Marcy, I forgive everything you've done. We just say, well, I get why you did it, but that doesn't mean it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also puts like someone like Cordelia into a really interesting position, you know, because she is traditionally not someone that you would feel sorry for. And in a lot of ways, she did bring this upon herself. That doesn't mean she deserves it. And it doesn't mean that Mitch deserved it or that Harmony deserved it or that any of them did, which I thought, again, this episode could have, in my opinion, been a lot better if they'd approached it differently. But I do appreciate what it was trying to say. So Principal Snyder, my favorite character, is on a roll in this episode. He is so scared that the kids are going to sue for all the horrible things that happen. You know, when Mitch is let out of the locker room, he goes like, there are no dead kids here this week.
This week, yeah.
He is the best. What newbies, what do you guys think about Snyder? I don't think you're not supposed to think he's the best, but I think he's the best.
Well, I mean, he's decidedly different from Principal Flutie.
Yes.
And we I quite loved him. I loved Flutie a lot. So, you know, the fact that he's kind of on to the fact that Buffy is, like, around when everything goes weird, like, that's not great for Buffy, but it's hysterical because not only does he not, like, he doesn't think she's involved in, like, the cause of these things, but he just thinks she's this nosy, you know, annoying kid, which cracks me up. But, yeah, he's rather funny as he just kind of pops in and, you know, tries to keep Buffy out of things. It's, yeah, and I really loved Willow and Xander, like, kind of taking the initiative to, like, distract him this episode. Like, what? He's gonna sue? Like, it was well done. Cracked me up.
The other lawyers call him the Beast. I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed going to Hyperbole, like, right after they said that line, just checking Hyperbole and seeing a Teen Wolf news post about the Beast. And I was like, ooh.
Yep.
It's all connected. Yes. So going back to Marcy a little bit and going back to this whole idea of how she was ignored and then she became invisible, the fact that she can become invisible because she is living on a Hellmouth, which, as we know, is the center of mystical convergence. Do we buy it? Is it a little bit out of the blue?
I mean, I feel like it has to be, some of the things in the show have to be a little convenient.
Mm.
And, you know, if you're going to consistently have this, like, reintroduction of different types of, like, supernatural things, like, yeah, having the Hellmouth there is rather convenient, especially for, like, the FBI to, like, you know, pick up these invisible teens, like, being like, oh, we could just go to the Hellmouth and gather some things that are going on. But they don't seem to, like, you know, be in tune with, like, oh, there are also demons and vampires and possessed hyenas living here as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think I'm so in tune so much as to, like, you know, oh, according, like, Mitch kind of phrased it, according to Buffy physics, like, I think I've kind of gotten past the point of being like, oh, of course, like, it's like, I'm just sort of at the point where I'm like, oh yeah, this will happen here. Like, I've kind of been able to take that step back, and the puppet episode really helped with this, because now I'm just sort of like, okay, I've hit that turning point where I'm going to take these episodes at face value, because I really enjoyed the puppet episode. And I think that's why I enjoyed this episode, mainly because Marcy was so
extreme in her actions. Like, that baseball bat scene, like, actually physically bothered me. I'm like, yeah. I cannot watch him get beat with a baseball bat. Like, that's just not in my wheelhouse of things I enjoy. But yeah, so I was it convenient? Yeah, but does it kind of play into how this universe is going to work? I think so.
Yeah, and that's a good approach to take, because I think, like, on one hand, there are definitely rules of the Buffy universe that are observed and followed. You know, when you're telling a fantastical story, you have to set up rules and you have to keep those rules, and it doesn't matter what those rules are. And I think Buffy is very good at doing that, but on the other hand, as you said, you have to sort of take a step back and say, okay, well, this is a place where the impossible things become possible, you know, where your nightmares literally come true. And there's such a thing as dimensional shifts that mean that Buffy's dad can be in her nightmare in real life, but also be somewhere else completely. And, you know, all of those things. And I think a girl turning invisible because she is ignored by everyone, and the Hellmouth sort of festering this very powerful teenage emotion of feeling invisible, it's not the craziest thing the show or most other supernatural shows have done. So I buy it for that. I buy Marcy's blind rage a lot less. But then again, as we see at the end of the episode, there might, you know, Marcy might not just be a poor invisible girl. She might actually have potential for, you know, what was that chapter called? Like, assassination and something else. Yeah. And she was like, yeah.
I thought it was also like, they're trying so hard to justify her actions. And that whole scene where they're talking about, like, oh, all these people only wrote "have a great summer" in her yearbook. I'm like, yeah, but still, I wrote a lot of "have a great summers," and I'm not fearing for my life that someone's going to come kill me because of it.
But then they kind of did undo that, though, when Buffy said, you know, I did feel sorry for you, but now I just think you're a mad person, you know.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, me too.
She is a little crazy.
Yeah. It's kind of like, actually, I appreciate those reactions like that because they make it all better. It's like, I think Xander as well had some scenes in this episode where he was like, I'm going to go spy on the girl in the locker room. And you're like, oh, Xander, you're such a creep. But then you look at Giles's face, and Giles's face says, oh, Xander, you're such a creep. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, the show knows. It's okay. So Marcy, did anyone else recognize the actress? She's been in American Horror Story and Heroes, and I believe some other stuff. Clea DuVall.
Oh yeah, she's been in a bunch of stuff. I recognized her as the girl from Girl Interrupted, which is a really old movie now.
Yeah,
but she, you know, she was great in that, and then she was in Argo, which was just came out a couple years ago, and like, so her face is really familiar to me. It was just a matter of like placing it.
Yeah, she's been around the in smaller roles. Those actors are always fun to spot. So moving on a little bit to talk about Cordelia, which is what I really want to talk about in this episode, because I think she takes a few very great steps towards becoming maybe a little bit more likable, maybe. Do you guys think that what happened to Cordelia this episode, the way that she chose to come to Buffy for help and kind of insinuating that, you know, yeah, I know you're weird, but now I actually need your weirdness. Did that make sense?
I think it did, especially because Cordelia had the right sense to realize, like, oh, these things are happening to everyone around me. They must be targeting me. Yeah. And it wasn't like her selfishness was like kind of perfectly in tune in this episode, which I really appreciated. And I also thought that Marcy attacking everyone around Cordelia, I think she thought that that would have a bigger effect on like affecting Cordelia's mind. Like, oh, all of these like poor people around me are being attacked, but it wasn't so like it had the opposite effect. Cordelia was kind of like, I don't really care so much about everyone else being attacked. I just know that I'm next. Yeah. So, like, trying to, like, hurt Cordelia didn't really hurt Cordelia.
Like, you just cared about how their injuries impacted
her.
Yeah,
and it only hurt Cordelia in, like, a superficial sense, which I guess is the best way to attack Cordelia. Like, her date would have a black eye.
Yeah. But, you know, that's interesting because I think we see in both this episode and the next episode that in a lot of ways, I think in the season one, like, Cordelia's strength really is her superficiality, because you can't hurt her with dead guys in the fridge and like blind driving tests and you know, almost killing her. Like, that stuff, it does not faze her. She will bite the vampires right back, literally, mm-hmm. as we see in the next episode. But, you know, you like cut her face or like you do whatever and you like mess up her hair and her nightmare, she's like, okay, crap's gonna go down. And I think that actually, that says a lot, that makes sense from what we've seen with Cordelia so far, and I think that makes her really enjoyable to watch.
Weirdly for me, the thing that endeared her to me the most was, and it's probably because I'm a teacher, but that she went to her
I know
teacher and was like, will you help me with my homework?
Yes.
Which is like what the teacher is there for, but most students will not go get that help and they would benefit so much from it. And the fact that she does that tells me a lot about her, like taking mm-hmm. her education seriously, which you don't really think she is, but the fact that she makes the effort to do that actually did a lot for her character for me.
And we get that a lot in this episode from Cordelia, because so far we've really only seen her in the background. We've seen the shallow side. Ironically, we've seen a very shallow side of Cordelia so far. And we've, in the first episode, you know, she's sharing her textbook with Buffy. She's clearly paying attention. But it's not until now that we're realizing that Cordelia really, when she says stuff like, you know, I am surrounding myself with people, I'm putting on this, I mean, she's not putting on a show, she really is this person, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't have depth, you know, it doesn't mean that she isn't also interested in her education, and it doesn't mean that she can't be, that's a great thing about Cordelia, you know, she can be a bitch, and she can be superficial, but she can also be really intelligent, and she can also be really thoughtful, and there's a lot of interplay in this episode that comes across really well. And one other thing I wanted to bring up about her, too, is that I think we see a lot of parallels between Cordelia's life now and Buffy's life in L.A., you know, some of them very blatant parallels, like when Buffy is looking in at the little, like, Cinderella scene when Cordelia is getting dressed, but also just in some of the way that they're talking to each other. I think that is an intentional thing. Did you guys notice that at all? Or?
As I say, I don't really know much. I only know what the show has told us about mm-hmm. her life in L.A. So you can kind of see through Buffy's eyes what she's like thinking. Like, you can see her going, you know, mm-hmm. that used to be me, that could have been me, you know, exactly. Look where I am now. And that, you know, it's really, it helps you get to know Buffy better. Like, just looking through her eyes at Cordelia, and the fact that she's not always like rolling her eyes at this girl who just wants to be popular and is enjoying being the popular girl in high school. Like, Buffy's not rolling her eyes at her because she knows what that's like. She wishes, you know, in some parts of her wishes, she could go back to that. And so it does. It helps you get to know Buffy better, just because, you know, there are parts of Cordelia that aren't awful. And those are the parts that, like, Buffy kind of wishes that she could embrace a little further in her own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, just because, like Kristen said, like, we only have what we, like, the little tidbits that we,
well, that's kind of what I'm referring to as well. Yeah, that she's sort of like saying, you know, I used to be May Queen and all of those things.
Yeah, and I honestly, I don't know if I could picture that, just because of the Buffy that we've seen here. Like, I don't want to, I feel like she's had such a character shift, and I think in my mind I've kind of like, you know, I don't want to see her as a Cordelia, like, you know, that but I feel like she would have been a little bit nicer just because of the way she is with Xander and Willow, but maybe she wasn't. I'm not sure.
Well, I will say, I think one of the things that sort of influences the parallel that I'm making, which isn't exactly fair to the TV show, is that Cordelia is almost exactly the way that Buffy was in the movie. And Buffy in the movie in turn was almost exactly like Cher in Clueless. It's like all the same character in different things at this point. So maybe that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, well, she's the girl that had the clique that went to the mall and did the thing and sort of said ew at the gross vampire stuff in the movie. And that's not necessarily relating to the show, I guess.
There's a movie?
What? Oh my God, spoilers! Did you not know there was a movie?
I really, seriously did not know that there
were
was
you
a movie.
Not on the intro episode? I swear we talked about it. Well, there was a movie, I think, in like...
I was, but I don't remember. Maybe I just didn't pick up on the fact that you were talking about a movie.
Oh, okay. Well, it was in like 1991 or 2. It was Christy Swanson was Buffy, and it was like written by Joss Whedon. It was his idea, but then the Gazooies, the evil people, they're not really evil, but they were like basically the people that are usually blamed for the movie. Uh-huh. They basically took it and turned it into something that is very, very laughable. And if you ever want a good laugh, the Buffy movie is where to go. And
I'm still scarred at watching the bad M. Night Shyamalan Avatar movie, so I don't know if I'll watch a Buffy movie.
Yeah. Well, the Buffy movie basically is not canon for the show, but it does sort of set, like, it's where they got a lot of the idea, or where Joss Whedon basically said, okay, the movie failed, I'm going to try doing this idea again as a TV show. But Buffy was in LA in the movie, and she does have a lot of the stuff that Buffy refers to in the show, but it's all different as well, so it's like inspired by. So yeah, anyway, it's a whole other discussion.
Well, good to know.
Yeah, I was thinking at one point we should like do a commentary or something. It would be really funny in like 5 years when we're done with the show.
2017.
Oh, God. But then we do Angel, so it's like 2019 or whatever. Going back, we're sort of going back and forth between Cordelia and Marcy in this discussion, but when Buffy and Cordelia are strapped to the chairs after Buffy's been injected with anesthesia and Marcy's about to cut Cordelia's face open, Mitch has a question in here that asks, what was the point of including Buffy and Cordelia's face reconfiguration? Like, what lesson was Marcy basically bringing her there to show her? And what do you guys think about that, if anything?
I think, like, honestly, I just assumed that because Buffy was on to her, mm-hmm. and, like, knew that she was invisible and was living at the school and was the one, like, since Buffy figured it out, Marcy just included her in the whole kidnapping thing. And I didn't know exactly what Marcy's plan was with Buffy, but I just assumed because she had figured it out, Marcy couldn't just let her run around while she did what she needed to do for Cordelia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep an eye on her.
Yeah, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's a good thought. I was thinking like it was either because she wanted an audience, like because the whole point of Cordelia, her reconfiguring Cordelia's face was to give her a face she wouldn't forget. So she would want the theatrics. She would want someone there to witness that moment of what is for her a triumph. And it could also be that she kind of identifies with Buffy a little bit because, you know, Buffy was in this episode kind of being treated by Cordelia the way Marcy was being treated and stuff. So I don't know. Either of those theories, I guess, would be okay. I don't know if we're meant to take anything huge away from that. So at the end of the episode, Marcy is taken away by the Men in Black and initiated into this like invisible assassin school, which I thought that was the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I hate that so much.
Are you kidding? The acting where they're trying, the two FBI agents are, like, slowly untying her and letting her into the room? That was, like, brilliant acting.
And Mitch asks, like, how does she find her seat? That's such a good
that
point.
That was so true. Like, I thought that, too. I was like, can they see each other? Maybe?
No. Maybe an invisible, like, person was leading her. Like, an invisible dog or something. I don't know.
I wanted to assume that her chair was just pushed in or something, and it was the only chair pushed in, but it's not. They're all sitting the same distance away from the table, so I'm like, I have no idea.
This is the biggest mystery of the show, guys. We'll never know. But yeah, so this idea, I mean, I guess there's a lot of things that I don't like about this whole, like, FBI coming in and taking it, like, and there's a whole classroom of invisible girls. I just think it's such a dumb thing to, like, inject into an episode like that. But one thing I do like about it is that it kind of does indicate that, like you guys were saying, there's a bigger world out there. Like, we're not just assuming that Sunnydale exists in this enclosed space, you know? So I guess for that reason, I thought it was okay. What did you guys think?
I love it.
Yeah, love it?
I really loved it.
Oh my God. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that I'm not all negative. Or I guess I am, but someone else is here to counter me. And Mitch asks as well a question that me and Caitlin have to know comment on, I suppose. But he asks, are we to understand that there are either multiple Hellmouths or just multiple ways to become invisible?
I don't know.
Hashtag no comment.
No comment. Kristen, Brittany, any wild theories?
For every master, there's a Hellmouth, apparently. So, you know, like it would be strange to think that Sunnydale was the only place that there was any sort of, you know, magical convergence or whatever. Yeah. So I would imagine that elsewhere in the world there are some other places. I wouldn't think there would be enough to fill a classroom full of students, but maybe some of these students are older or younger, or, you know, they weren't necessarily kids. They're the invisible guy, you know, in the office or whatever. So I, you know, I'm hoping there aren't too many because it would make Sunnydale less, like, especially yeah. horrible. But yeah.
I think Karen will like this, but I like to think that Kevin Bacon is leading all of them as the Invisible Man. you know, like he's in charge of this operation, and then Buffy now is incorporated in that world.
It's like, it's moments like this, too, when I just see Joss Whedon's, like, love of comic books just assert itself on Buffy, because this is such a, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, or, like, you know, what's the word, X-Men thing or whatever. Like, it's just, it's so weird and comic booky and yeah. Anyway.
And I can't believe, now that we're at the end of the episode, like, did Mitch just, am I making it up? This was the episode, like, you know, Angel showed up, right? Like,
yes. That okay. was not a point in the discussion. You're right. Like, he saved,
like, this,
the gang.
Like, big thing that's, yeah.
Oh my God. And what did you guys think about that whole thing with Angel and Giles, like, geeking out about books?
Okay, it was my favorite scene. That's why I was like, wait, did I make up that this was my favorite scene? And then all of a sudden I'm like, Angel wasn't even in this doc. Hold on.
I know. God, it was like, it was all about the show, Mitch, because he got so happy about the name.
But yeah, no, that was like, I was so excited for, like, Angel and Giles to just be, like, kicking it in the library for, like, a minute and a half.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, that does kind of lead into our favorite scene. So why did you like that so much?
Well, first of all, Angel just showing up out of nowhere is always a crowd pleaser. Glad to see he has another leather jacket on hand.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like him showing up and then Giles just being, like, you know, deducing that he's a vampire because he has no reflection and, like, you know, kind of being like, oh, you're a friendly vampire. And then, like, him getting so excited when Angel's like, oh, the Codex. Yeah, I could totally get that. And Giles just is, like, geeking out that he could have access to the Codex. Like, mm-hmm. It was just so great. And I loved both of them together because Giles, like, was just so excited to have him around.
Yes. Yeah, that was definitely great. And, well, I guess my favorite scene, just to really briefly mentioned, I've talked about it before, but mine has to be the Buffy and Cordelia bonding scene where Cordelia is changing and Buffy is standing outside of the door and they just have this understanding-ish, but it's very Cordelia at the same time. You know, Buffy's trying to relate. She's like, I remember what it was like when I was, like, in your position, and Cordy's like, is that why you got weird and got kicked out? And I just thought that was awesome. It says a lot about the parallels and differences between these two characters. Caitlin, what was yours?
Mine's the moment after Buffy has gotten free of her bonds and she's trying to fight Marcy and she's invisible. So there's that moment where she tells Cordelia to shut up and the way she's like, okay, that's funny to me. But there's the scene where she's shuts her eyes and the camera kind of spins around her as she's listening. Like, I just love how that looks. And you can tell that Buffy's been kind of taking her training with Giles to heart. And I love how it goes.
Me too. And Kristen, how about you?
Mine was Cordelia being in class and, like, at the beginning, them all trying to, like, not make a face, but everyone made a face as she explains that, like, this horrible thing happened and she hit this girl with a car and the girl was trying to make it all about her and her pain when this was, like, the worst thing that ever happened to Cordelia ever. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I just loved everybody's faces during that. And then the teacher, like, wholeheartedly is, like, thanking Cordelia for doing the reading. And, yeah. And you realize that Cordelia is not, like, she might be kind of self-centered and horrible sometimes, but she's also not, like,
a terrible student. And that kind of, it did, it changed my view of Cordelia a little bit. So I really liked the scene just because it was ridiculous and also, like, informative.
I agree. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that teacher so much because I was a TA for, like, a freshman seminar my senior year. And my professor did the same thing that this teacher was able to do, where he was able to, like, twist people's answers to be like, okay, like, yeah, that works. But also, let's expand upon that with some correctness of what I'm trying to get to. And yeah. I just, like, really appreciated that. I don't know why.
That's, like, the opposite of the teacher I've just had, where every time someone actually opens their mouth to, like, offer, like, an answer to his question, you see his face twist into this, like, oh, that's not what I wanted you to say. And you're like, okay. Aww. And then you just shut up halfway through. It's awful. But, yeah, no, that was actually, that was my favorite line, that part that she said when she goes, like, people think their problems are so huge. No, people who think their problems are so huge craze me. Like this one time I sort of ran over this girl on her bike and it was the most traumatizing event of my life. And she's trying to make it all about her leg. Like my pain meant nothing. And it's just, I don't know. I like that thought. Like, I like, you know, she's like, people who think their problems are so big are just so annoying. And even though she's being very selfish, she's also making a very, very good point. The teacher was right. And that, along with the line, you know, when she says you can be surrounded by people and be completely alone, because, I mean, she's expressing a very common feeling very eloquently. And I think this is one of the, like, these days, looking back on it, you think, well, that's a very, that's obvious. But at the time, I think it meant a lot to hear someone say that on television. Caitlin, what's yours?
So mine was when Cordelia comes to ask the group for help and she's trying to get Buffy to agree. And she's like, I know you share this feeling that we have for each other deep down. And Willow says, nausea?
That was funny.
Willow with the zinger.
Yeah. And how about you, Kristen?
Mine was while they were all at the lunch table, like, trying to figure out what this invisible thing was that attacked poor Mitch. And Giles says, it's a bit of a puzzle, really. I've never actually heard of anyone attacked by a lone baseball bat before. And Xander says, maybe it's a vampire bat. And then there's silence. And he says, I'm alone with that one, huh?
You know what is, you know what is funny?
I love cheesy jokes. Like, I love them so much. And it was so, he went for it, man. He went full force and it just didn't land.
This is, like, one of those jokes that, like, I swear this is the rewatch where I finally understood what he meant. Because, like, you know when you watch, like, you guys, you probably don't know, but maybe you do if you watch foreign stuff, but, like, you don't understand what they're saying, but you read the subtitles, and sometimes they change the jokes because they don't make sense in other languages. Like, bat is not a bat in Danish, so it's two different words. So I never got the joke, and then I started watching it in English, and I was just like, that's a weird thing. That doesn't make any sense. But of course, vampire bat, like a bat. I get it now. I'm so, like, I get the joke. I would have laughed, like, 10 years later.
That's amazing.
And Brittany, what's your favorite line?
Mine was when Cordelia approaches Buffy and she's like, because you're always around when all this weird stuff is happening, and I know you're very strong and you've got all of those weapons. I was kind of hoping you were in a gang.
Yeah. She figures it out almost.
Yeah.
Very good, Cordelia. Okay, so moving on from Out of Mind, Out of Sight into our season one finale, Prophecy Girl. So I was going to ask you, but I'm going to read the synopsis and I'll ask you lots of stuff. So Mitch's synopsis for this episode. In this episode, hearts are both broken and sucked dry as Buffy faces the master mano a mano. When an earthquake hits Sunnydale, the Scoobies put together that the end of times is nigh. Xander works up the nerve to ask Buffy to the spring fling, but she tells him that she doesn't want to jeopardize their friendship. Later, Angel and Giles discuss a prophecy stating Buffy will die after being led to the Master by the Anointed One. When Buffy overhears his conversations, she quits being the Slayer in favor of not dying at the tender age of 16. Meanwhile, Cordelia and Willow discover a room full of corpses with bites on their necks. I'm so disappointed Mitch didn't, like, name drop himself in here. Oh, anyway, Willow is extremely disturbed by this event, convincing a dress-clad Buffy to go back into the slaying game. game. As the Anointed leads Buffy to the Master's Lair, Xander enlists Angel to help fight the Vampire Lord. Buffy is hypnotized and bitten by the Master, both freeing him from his cavern prison and ending the Slayer's life. Thankfully, Angel and Xander show up just in the nick of time to perform CPR and resuscitate her. Calendar and Willow are cornered by a sea of undead, but fear not. Cordelia races onto the scene, crashing through the extremely thin drywalls of the school's set. They hole up in the library with Giles as Audrey II, I don't get that reference, emerges from somewhere that's mean. Cue series theme. Buffy struts like a BAMF on her way to finish the Master off once and for all. Feeling stronger than ever, the Slayer is able to resist the Master's hypnotism, tossing him on top of a wooden spike. As Voldemort disintegrates, Audrey II retreats into hell, and the apocalypse is effectively stopped in its tracks. Bloody, beaten, and bruised, the Scoobies head off to the Bronze for a much-needed electric slide. That's the season. It's over, guys. We made it. Okay, so the season one finale. What did you think?
I loved it. And Audrey, I believe, is a reference to Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay, then.
The big plant.
That's what I... Yeah. Hand-eating plant, yeah.
So, bravo, Mitch. That was actually really funny. I really liked the finale. In fact, I watched a couple of scenes twice just because...
Oh, nice.
I don't know. I just really liked it. So I will say, though, Mitch's first discussion point about the earthquake was probably my favorite line of all of Buffy that happened so far, which I didn't choose it as my favorite one. But I think that the Master saying, what do you think, a 5.1, was the best thing that's ever happened in Buffy. And I thought it was like an outtake that they just left in because, like, I just feel like that's something that a character would say, like, right before they're about to call cut. But it was so good. But yeah, I really liked the whole episode.
Cool. Kristen, how about you?
I liked it a lot. Yeah. There was a lot of really fun juxtaposition stuff, like Buffy in a dress going to save the world and her leather jacket on top of it, which made me really happy. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, there was a lot of stuff in here that just was really fun, especially for a finale, on top of the emotionally draining parts that... Mm. You know, the show got really deep in this episode, and there's some things that you wouldn't necessarily expect from the way we've kind of watched it so far, with all the jokes and the silly, you know, teachers of praying mantis and things like that. So
that's not deep enough for you? What do you want, Kristen?
Yeah, so I enjoyed this episode a lot.
Yeah.
I do have one quick question. Did they know that they were coming back for another season after this or no?
I don't think they did. I think that there's only like one instance. It probably doesn't, it's not relevant at this point, but no, I don't think they did.
Okay. Well, no, because that makes a lot more sense because I feel like that scene between, which we'll talk about in a little while, the scene between like Buffy, Giles, and Angel, like, would have packed a much bigger punch, like let's mm-hmm. say like a season 3, but it makes more sense that they had to get that scene in now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if I had watched all of these people for like 3 seasons and that scene happened, I would have been destroyed. But because I've only had like, you know, 10 episodes or whatever.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And I think that's kind of like, because this was a mid-season replacement show, hence the terrible budget and, you know, the sort of shorter season. And they didn't know they were coming back. And they would have definitely, you know, hoping they would come back. But these are big emotional moments. I think the Buffy and Giles stuff it may feel a little bit rushed if you haven't, like if you're not rewatching, but if you're watching for the first time, I don't know. But it did probably have that big emotional oomph. If it was to serve as a series finale, they wanted to make sure. Although, you know, season finales in general are you know, supposed to be more emotional, I would imagine. But yeah, you know, that's one of the things about this episode. This definitely is not my favorite episode of the show or anything, but I do think that emotional punch and those emotional moments between all the characters makes it something special. And for the newbies especially, obviously you guys know, we've been saying all the time, like we try not to give anything away, but we can't help it. We're like, this show is so emotional, you guys, blah, 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 it will wreck you, blah, 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 whatever, big words. But even though we've said all that, was it still kind of surprising to see that it's actually going there, it's actually taking you to those emotional depths that praying mantises or whatever aren't exactly setting up.
Yeah, I think it was surprising because not so much that it took us there, but that I was able to feel that way after not having really liked the first couple of episodes of Buffy. And I think that's due to the fact that I was drawn to Giles and the characters that I was drawn to, like, sort of paying attention to them and not ignoring, but, like, not really enjoying, like, you know, the praying mantis and stuff like that. It didn't matter in the end. Like, it's still, this episode still delivered the emotional punch that it intended to, even though I wasn't really into it until the puppet.
And isn't that satisfying too, to know, like, with someone like Giles, like, in some shows, like, you might find, like, a secondary or tertiary character that you really enjoy and you're, like, watching them and hoping they get more screen time. But with someone like Giles, they could so easily have made him a background character. They could so easily have made them that traditional, like, teacher slash parental figure. But he's in the center of the action. He gets the emotional close-ups. He gets the big lines and the big relationship with Buffy and everything like that.
Yeah, and that nightmare episode helped too.
Yeah.
Like, when his nightmare was, you know, Buffy being dead, it was like, wow, that also hurt a little bit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I guess we'll get to Giles later on, if nothing else, definitely in the quotes. So one of the first things that happened in this episode is actually an emotional punch of a different sort, because Xander is, first he's practicing asking Buffy out on poor Willow, because he just can't take a hint. And, then he goes to Buffy and he finally does what all humans have dreaded and perhaps have even done in their lifetime. He tells her plain and simple, you know, I like you. And she has to very plain and simply reject him. What did you guys think about this scene? It's very raw, isn't it? Very uncomfortable.
Yeah, watching Buffy so far, they've set up this chain of, like, I don't even know, crushes, romantic interests. Like, you know, Willow likes Xander, who likes Buffy, who likes Angel, and Angel can't be with her because he's a vampire and she's a slayer. Like, there's this whole line of people who all have some sort of interest in each other, but none of them are, like, there's nothing that can really make anything better because, you know, everyone is looking at something else or is looking for something else. So, like, at some point that had to come to a head. Like, you couldn't just leave the first season without addressing some point of it. And I think this was kind of the perfect way to address it without having to, like, set up a ship or make sure that everyone knew that this is, you know, by having Xander confront her about it and having her tell him, I'm sorry, you know, I still want to be your friend, but I just don't see you like that. It severs that line, like, down the middle. And now hopefully, you know, Xander can, like, get past the embarrassment factor, which I think is more damaging than anything else, is that he, you know, had the guts to say it and she still just flat out rejected him, you know, to his face.
Yeah.
If he can get past that, then they can really be friends, because he won't be hanging around for another reason. He'll be hanging around because he cares about Buffy and wants to be her friend. So now that the line's been cut off in the middle, I'm hoping that next season maybe Xander won't be quite as, like, underhandedly nefarious about everything. Like, oh, I want to, you know, I want to secretly try and get in Buffy's pants. But, like, now she knows and it's not happening.
Yeah. And he definitely needed the shutdown. Like, it was storytelling wise, as we've talked about Xander this season, it has kind of been underlying, like, he's laying it on way too thick. It's like borderline / crossing the line of being uncomfortable the way that he is pursuing her, and there's all this ambiguity. And I think it was so important for these characters that they sat down and had this raw, honest conversation. I like you, I don't like you, what do we do now? And it is one of those things, I mean, for everything that happens in Buffy, it's gonna have lasting consequences. It's everything, all of the stuff that these characters go through settle in their bones and impact their decisions going forward. And this was a big moment, and I thought it played out really well.
I was gonna say, what I find so interesting is that when you think about it, this is a pretty minor thing in the grand scheme of things. You know, guy asks girl out, girl rejects him. That's a pretty small scale thing in an episode that deals with basically the end of the world potentially happening, but they're given equal emotional weight in this episode, which I just find very interesting.
That's a good point. Did you want to say something?
So, like, I forgot to bring this up in the last episode, but I think it actually works better here. I was like, when Xander and Willow were, you know, like talking about things from their past, like, and they were like really buddy buddy, and they were like going to have dinner together at someone's house. Like, I realize now that they were doing that to, like, you know, show that they have this history and they've been friends for a while. But when, like, Xander put his arm on Willow's back, I'm like, oh, something is totally going on between these two. Like, they finally hit it off in secret and they're not ready to tell Buffy. And then this episode happened, and I'm like, if I was Willow, I'd be so pissed, because if I read into all that stuff happening as, like, you know, Xander being Willow's, like, really good friend and, like, kind of showing that he liked her, like, I could easily see where Willow's picking up on certain things, and then to have this guy, like, constantly talk about Buffy in front of you when she stood up to him, like, at the end when he was just like, oh, well, we could go together. And she was like, no, we can't. Like, that's ridiculous. I was so happy for her, because I was picking up on the things that I guess if I was Willow, I'd be giving
me too.
They would have meant.
I love so that good. Moment so much. For Willow, it was just, it was so quiet and it was so understated, but it was such a powerful moment of assertion for her that she needed. As much as Xander needed the rejection, Willow needed to reject.
Yeah,
him.
It just made that, like, little moment in the episode before mean so much more.
Have you guys seen the movie Love, Rosie?
No, it's not on my list.
Oh, it's so good. Anyway, this is totally lost on you guys now. I was just going to say, I think Willow hopes that she's living in that movie. Where she's like the best friend and they've always been close. And, you know, he's never seen her and all that. And but still, yay for assertion. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I looked at Karen after Willow, like, you know, flat out said no. And I was like, I am so proud of her. Like, yeah. I'm like, it would be so easy to just say yes and try and, you know, out Buffy, like, put the big dress on and try and, you know, make him see you. But instead of doing that, she respects herself enough to be like, no, I'm not going to be that person. I don't need to be that person. No. And I was like, you know, go Willow. And yeah, I love her more and more every episode, but this was just a standout moment. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. So moving on to another huge part of this episode, arguably the biggest moment in the episode is where Angel and Giles, now the best of friends, are discovering the prophecy, and Buffy walks in to see them, or overhear the fact that she is destined to die. So she has this big breakdown that I'm sure is someone's quote, so I won't quote it here. But it basically ends with her saying, you know, I'm 16 years old. I don't want to die. You know, I quit. I quit the slaying thing. I'm done. And this was, I mean, I'm like very proud of the fact that I hardly ever cry watching television. But this episode, every time I'm like tearing up every time I watch it.
Oh, the scene wrecks me. Has wrecked me since. What gets me about this scene is that I had watched this scene before I was 16 and being like, oh my God, you're 16. And then I'm 27 now and I'm like, oh, you're such a child.
Yeah, I know. It, like, it brings it home, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, but also the fact that, you know, she's doing all these things. She's trying to be much more of a grown up than she is. Again, I will say Sarah Michelle Gellar was a teenager when she filmed the pilot, but I guess she was 20 at this point. But, you know, when she just says, you know, I'm 16 years old, and you just think, oh my God, she's 16 years old. And this guy has just told her she's going to die. And the way she reacts to that, Sarah Michelle Gellar's acting in the scene, it's so good.
And also Giles, like, gutted me in this scene.
And his,
like,
acting, yes.
Yeah, like, you know that he has gone through every possible, like, you just see how frustrated he is when, you know, Calendar, like, walks in. Like, you know, it's just, like, he is so frustrated and, like, torn up about this. Like, he has literally looked into every possible way that this cannot happen. And, he, you know, it just looking at that defeat. It's it was so bad.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm just, everything about the scene is perfect, and the weight they give to Giles, and also as well, it would have been so easy to make the scene about Buffy and Angel. Like, to say, okay, well, Angel's here, he's going to sweep in and be like, but I love you. And she's going to be like, I don't want to die, Angel. But it's not like that at all. It's Buffy
when
and
she's
Giles.
Like, don't come near me. I'm like, oh my God, this is
Yeah, like, I loved Angel's presence in the scene, but it also wasn't about him. Like, he needed to be there, but he just contributed to it.
Mm-hmm. It's so, it's so good, guys. So good. So after that, another great, great scene, which is where Buffy gets back home and she is in her room. She's trying to convince her mom to skip town. And basically what forces her to stay is that her mom's gallery is open on the weekends. Like, life goes on just in a horrible sort of ironic way. And Joyce just sort of makes that mention about, like, Buffy not having been asked to prom by the right guy, and you're like, oh my God, you know, like, if she only knew. And Buffy, again, in her acting in the scene and when she sees the dress, is just amazing.
I think what's really important about this scene too is this episode kind of hammers home the whole, like, changing your fate sort of thing, and prophecies not necessarily coming to pass as they will. And Joyce has her own thing of, you know, screw what you think is happening, like, do your own thing. And that's kind of the first sort of chink in the whole, the prophecy has to go down exactly how we think it's going to go down. And we find out several more times through the episode that there are times that it's not what you think. And I think that's really interesting that it kind of sneaks in, and at this point, before pretty much everything else.
Yeah, exactly. And so while Buffy is angsting about that little thing, her death, Willow and Cordelia are actually going through something traumatic as well, because they are now, like, hanging out, but in a way that makes total sense for the plot. It's not like Cordelia suddenly, like, their best friend or anything. Like, Cordelia needs Willow's help with the band. So they were, like, walking to somewhere to get Mitch. And Cordelia just manages to convince us, like, there's this, her feelings for Mitch are, like, softening her up a little bit. You know, she's opening up to Willow about how he's, like, kind of cute, and she, like, doesn't even mind that he stood her up, and all this niceness is very abruptly and horrifyingly interrupted when they come across that massacre with the cartoon, which, I don't know about you guys, when I watched this for the first time many, many years ago, it really frightened me. It was a really scary scene.
It was as jarring for me as I think it was for Willow. Like, I didn't notice the handprint on the screen when you first, like, you're supposed to see it, but you're not supposed to see it.
Yeah.
And then she gets into the room and you see all of this, like, devastation in front of her, and she just fixates on that handprint. And then later when she's talking to Buffy about it, like, that, you can tell that this hit a little closer to home for Willow than anything they've come across so far. Like, nothing has affected her quite this badly. And so it just made me, like, I wanted to just hug Willow. It's like, you know, like, I know that this is a bit of an invasion. Like, this is her space. And now, you know, the vampires have been there. And so it's like, it makes you, like, your skin crawl a little bit because you feel so bad for her.
Yeah, it's true. Very, very, very scary scene. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was pretty jarring. Like, I wasn't expecting that to happen, but I also really appreciated the way they handled the fallout from it, especially, like, Willow. Like, they showed that, like, you know, this wasn't just another day and another body. Like, Willow was, like, really bothered by it. Mm-hmm. And I, like, appreciated how they handled the fallout. It wasn't just like, oh, this is something we're going to have to get used to seeing. It's like, no, this is actually out of place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Mitch had that point in the doc, too. He said, you know, finally someone reacts appropriately to walking into a room full of dead bodies. And I do think, I mean, they've reacted to dead people before, but because of the nature of the show, because of so many deaths, they are kind of very, very good at compartmentalizing at this point already. But yeah, there's still stuff that can break them, and brutal devastation and just mindless killing is clearly one of them. And of course, Buffy comes to see Willow in in her room when she's just absolutely just terrified, and Buffy is wearing her dress, and we get the first instance of the many "I like your dress" comments throughout the episode that I don't know if you guys noticed. And what do you guys think about the dress? Hashtag the dress.
Fine.
It wasn't, like, amazing or anything. God.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at the time it was, like, the most perfect thing in the world. But I'm like, my prom dress was better.
Yeah. It's very iconic. And obviously it's, like, very much intentionally meant to look, like, innocent and, you know, death, life, full cycle, all that stuff. And Mitch wrote in "way to emulate the final girl trope," and I like it. It's true, yeah. So Cordelia, when all the vampires are attacking the library, Cordelia, who has been noticing that these weird things are going on, at the beginning of the episode, she was out making out with again Mitch, who unfortunately we lost this episode, so no more references to that. And she arrives at the school just in time to save Jenny and Willow, who are being attacked by vampires from all sides. By the way, one of those shots of the vampires was also in the pilot. It was Buffy's dream. I don't know if you guys noticed. Probably not, because like it's a long time ago. So it asks, like, why did Cordelia randomly zoom in and save them? Didn't she just... did she give a reason? I forget. Or was it just because she was like... Mm-hmm.
She says something like, "I was waiting for someone," mm-hmm. I forget who, but she was waiting for someone out front or whatever, and she saw them all, and then, yeah. She says something, like, she has a reason for being at the school.
So there. Mystery solved. She has a reason. And Mitch writes in the doc, "Cordelia must be considered a Scooby by now." Hashtag no comment.
Yeah, you can say that, because I honestly don't know, and I don't know if I want her to be part of the gang mm-hmm. for... I like her, what her character does, you know, like mm-hmm. the purpose she's serving right now. So I will say, as a newbie, I'm kind of hoping that she's not. But
it's also a question of if Cordelia wants to be part of the gang.
Yeah. Seems like there's potential there, but nothing really definite.
Mm-hmm. And Mitch's next question asks, how long does the Slayer need to be dead in order for the next Slayer to be, quote unquote, tapped? Like, hashtag no comment? I don't know.
I mean, I guess longer than Buffy was passed out. Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely still the Slayer, so... and she seems stronger than ever, which is actually a super interesting point to notice as well. After Sander brings her back to life, she says, you know, she feels stronger, she's not affected by the Master's magic anymore, which was kind of cool. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that, or...
Yeah, I mean... It was fine. I was like, at this point, I was wondering if we were going to have like another huge, like, you know, big emotional type of thing. And it kind of like, it had to like pick up the pace, I think, towards the end. So a lot was going on mm-hmm. really quickly at this point. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. Oh no, she's back. Oh no, now she's got to fight. And now the Master's going down. I don't know what's happening. I was like, they got a lot, because at this point I was more paying attention to the Netflix like countdown to see how much time was left. I was like, what was gonna happen?
Yeah, what did you guys think when Buffy, when like they, Angel and Xander, they raced down and she was lying there in the pool and they were like, she's dead? Like, what were your sort of initial reactions to that?
Xander, like, stopping, you know, Buffy or Angel runs in and he just plows through, you know, he runs as fast as he possibly can to get to her. And Xander runs in, sees her, and stops, like, dead. And all I could think about in that moment is, like, Xander at the beginning of this episode, you know, went to Buffy and was like, I like you, I really want to date you, like, we should go on a date. And the difference between Xander and Angel in this scene, like, it solidified why Xander was never right for Buffy. And he wasn't willing to, like, you know, run straight to her and save the day. Like, Angel could not be apart from her anymore. Like, he had to be there and find out what was wrong and what could happen and what he could do to help her and save her in this moment. And Xander, like, stops and just stares it down, like, this has happened.
This has happened to me. You know?
Yeah. Like, he steps in a second when Angel literally can't help her, but, you know, it takes him a minute to, like, absorb what's happened to him, and Angel didn't need that. Like, he just you know, whatever Buffy needs, he's there. So for me, that's what this scene like did for me. It made it clear why Xander just was never, it was never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Xander may not be the love of her life, but he did literally give her life. You know, she was, we find out in this episode that the Master's drinking her blood didn't kill her. What killed her was the drowning part, which is also why she didn't turn into a vampire. Just in case, you know, that was unclear. The Xander with his breath that Angel apparently didn't have brings her back to life. And they are ready to fight with, complete with the Buffy theme song straight in the episode. Super weird, right?
It's, the cut is so weird.
Yeah. It's so weird.
No. They're like, we have this track and let's just chop it up. Let's not try to edit it. We'll just use it while we got.
It was so weird. Like, I get what they were going for, but no. Definitely not my favorite part of the episode. They arrive the creature has popped out of the library floor and is like trying to, I don't know what it's doing. It's waving its arms around, and Giles and Cordelia and Willow and Jenny Calendar are all stuck down there with it. And Buffy is up on the roof with Xander and Angel, I believe. No, she's just there with the Master, and she's fighting him, and his mojo doesn't work on her anymore. And she kills him, complete with a little pun about his fruit punch mouth. And he's done, leaving behind a skeleton, but nothing else. Are you glad that Voldemort is gone? The Wizarding World is safe once more?
I liked him. I'm not gonna lie.
I liked him too.
Yeah, I liked him. I'm hoping that skeleton comes back in the play somewhere down the line.
Like, maybe they, you know, use like, it like as a prop in like a class. It's like they play, yeah, that prop in like, anatomy.
It'll be like the basilisk where they need his like fang teeth.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah.
To destroy another demon or something like that. But yeah, I really did enjoy him, and I'm really glad that Buffy's back, and it's not in a way that's like, oh, now she's some sort of supernatural being, whether, yeah, or not that was a vampire. Like, you know, it didn't have to be a vampire, but some other thing had to come into play for her. You know, that didn't happen. I was glad about that. Like, I'm glad she's still Buffy as Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's definitely, she, again, you know, as Mitch noticed, you know, she does have like some regained, like, you know, I've just like been resuscitated, and now I'm like ready to kill the Masters. But I guess all that really did was to give her, like, she broke out of his spell, because that's it. She, like, she overcame the prophecy, you know, like she was supposed to die, and technically she did. So the Master got to leave his cave, and now she's back, and she's like free of the Master's, like, I don't know, his bind on her, I suppose. It was a very nice ending fight there. And that's it. That's the finale. Bring on season two. What were some of our favorite scenes in this episode? What was yours, Caitlin?
Mine was when, because Brittany took the best scene of the episode, mine was when Buffy goes to sit with Willow after she's found all the bodies, and Willow is just so upset, and that's just really fantastically acted. And the whole, just, she's being there for her best friend, and that's kind of when she decides she can't run away from all of this like she wants to, that she's going to go through with it.
Right, yeah. And accepting her own destiny, too. I mean, that's something we sort of haven't really touched upon, but all this season, Buffy has been like, you know, I don't really want to be the Slayer, and I'm going to go be a cheerleader, and, you know, prophecies and stuff, I don't really care about that, and she totally rejected all of that in this episode and said, I don't care, I don't want to be the Slayer anymore, I'm done. And then she realized what was really at stake and her role, and she embraced her calling, I suppose. And
so ironically, we find out that if she hadn't gone down, the Master couldn't have risen.
That's a good point too. There's always like two sides to a prophecy, isn't there? It was very interesting. And my favorite scene was totally different. It was when Buffy rejected Xander. Although the part where Cordelia bit a vampire was a close second, because it was awesome.
Only Cordelia would bite a vampire back. Like, yeah, that's,
I know.
It's great. I love it.
It's so awesome. But anyway, like that point where Buffy rejected Xander, I just, because like Caitlin said, like it had equal emotional weight to all the stuff with Buffy facing her destiny and rejecting it and embracing it and all of that. And I just liked how real it was. Like how we're talking about vampires and the end of the world and master and destiny, but then we have these two characters, like a friends, like teen friends, a boy and a girl, and they have to come to this moment after, you know, sort of being in this unsure territory for so long, where Xander bears, you know, lays his heart out for her, and she puts a stake in it, and you know, very literally or figuratively. And the dialogue, I mean, he says, "I like you," and she says, you know, "I don't feel the thing," and the country music too, very funny. That's a bit of a high point. And Brittany, what's yours?
My scene was Buffy yelling at Giles and Angel when she was like, "I quit. That's it. I'm not doing this anymore." Because, like we talked about ad nauseum, it's very emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. And Kristen, what about you?
Mine is the scene after Buffy yells at Giles and Angel, where Giles just tells her, "I'm going. I'm gonna face the master. You're not doing it. You're right. I need to, you know, get out in the world and away from my books." And Buffy just looks at him and is like, "No. Sorry. No."
Yeah.
I think it's what Buffy needed. Like, she didn't want to face this thing, and she had made the choice to face it, but she needed Giles to say, "No, I'm going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have to." And it was just a really nice little scene between the two of them.
It's such a nice, like, you know, I know he's not her, like, he's her actual parent, but in the scope of the show, like, that parent-child relationship of saying, you know, you're about to face the real world, you're about to face life or death, I want to do it for you, you know, I want to protect you, I want to fight your demons for you, very literally in this case. And Buffy stepping up and saying, I'm ready, I am, you know, you can't protect me, he can't do anything, he would just get himself killed, and everyone knows it, but he was the fact that he was willing to do it for her,
yeah,
and the fact that she was ready to say, "I'm going to do it myself," was a very big moment for the both of them. So our favorite lines, I'm just going to go first. Mine is Buffy, who punches out Giles and tells Jenny she's about to go face the master. And she tells him, or she tells Jenny, when he wakes up, tell him, I don't know, think of something cool. Tell him I said it. I like this line, first of all, because it's an amazing line. But I also had to pick it because this also happens to be my favorite actor Bradley James's Twitter quote. Like, his actual bio on Twitter is this quote, and which is doubly cool because he, of course, played King Arthur on Merlin. And oh yeah, who played his dad? That was Giles. It's all connected, and Bradley that James really is a deep Buffy fan. It's so funny, though. Like, I was trying to think because the lines felt so familiar to me, and I remembered that it's because, like, Bradley James is a nerd, and I enjoy that. So there you go. Caitlin, what's your favorite line?
Mine is when Buffy goes up to face the master the second time, and he's like, "You're dead." And she goes, "I may be dead, but I'm still pretty, which is more than I can say for you."
Yes, very good comeback, Buffy. Kristen, how about you?
My line comes from my favorite scene, and Giles says, "I've made up my mind." And Buffy says, "So have I." And Giles says, "I made up mine first. I'm older and wiser than you, and just do what you're told for once, all right?"
Oh, like, Giles.
In addition to being a really touching scene for them, it was also hilarious as he's like, "I'm doing this, just listen to me." And yeah, love Giles.
Yeah. And Brittany, you have, I mean, all these lines are great, but you have the best ones. You go last.
Mine is from my favorite scene, and it's when Buffy says, "So that's it, huh? I remember the drill. One slayer dies, next one's called. Wonder who she is. Will you train her, or will they send someone else?" And Giles is, like, so defeated, and he's like, "Buffy, they say it's how he's going to kill me. Do you think it'll hurt?" Oh, my God.
Oh, that line, "Do you think it'll hurt?" is just, that's the part where I'm like, oh, no.
Because it's the same part in Harry Potter where he asks, "Will it hurt?" And I'm like, shut up.
I am convinced that J.K. Rowling is a secret Buffy fan. This is one of the many, many reasons why I'm convinced. Like, the first season of Buffy and the first Harry Potter book both came out in 1997, but Buffy has been ahead of Harry Potter ever since then. And every parallel, I'm like, oop, there you go. That's, like, she ripped that off from Buffy. May just all be coincidences, but I'll let you guys judge when we get to the end of the show. It's definitely not the other way around. Pass it on to all the newbies out there. So that's it. That's the end of season one. And we're going to head on into season two in the next episode. Super exciting. We have some listener feedback for this episode before we wrap up this show. If you want to send listener feedback to us, you can do that in one of several ways. You can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at rewatchable. You can go find the podcast post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you want to leave us an iTunes review, Kristen will force Karen to barely eat so that they can budget in buying that really expensive prom dress they saw you eyeing at the shops. That's actually an incentive that I would consider. Of course, I don't endorse starring Karen.
I was going to say, I'll let Karen know.
Yeah.
Things do get rough.
Yeah, oh god. So our listener feedback, the first one, and Caitlin, do you want to get that one?
Sure, I am going to butcher your name. I'm so sorry. This is from Agosical Stamas. Says, I was so wrapped into listening to you on this past week's episode that I missed my exit. I wound up where I began at the exit I used to leave downtown and go home. That's bad. It would be nice hear some more cast trivia in the episodes of Rewatchable, like the actress who played Amy in Witch Witch. Actually, Edition 4 and was running for the role of Buffy.
Well, we just gave you that one at the top of the show.
Selena's a mind reader.
I know. I swear I didn't see this beforehand. Well, there you go. That's the trivia in reverse. And our email from Lince Moore, Kristen?
Sure. Lince says, I was wondering if any of you had ever listened to the commentaries, and if you had, do you actually like them? I find them really interesting and insightful, especially the ones that Joss or Jane Espenson do.
Mm-hmm. I've listened to some, not all though.
I love commentaries, so I didn't like. I've been watching on Netflix, so if I ever get my hands on like the DVDs, I would love to go back and listen to all the insight.
It's good fun. It's actually really hard because I found myself listening to a couple of them early on, and I was like, am I saying things that I've seen in the episode, or am I saying things that Joss Whedon has said about the episode? And I'm not sure we should say a lot of that because you never know, you know? So, I'm going to probably not do that until we finish this rewatch, but, they are very good. And Jane Espenson is like my personal favorite writer of all time. So yes, definitely second that. Have you listened to any, Caitlin?
I haven't.
Okay, you have that to look forward to. And Alex Smith says, Brittany?
Alex says, hi guys, just wanted to say I love your podcast. I'm currently rewatching both Veronica Mars and Buffy and enjoying both old and new episodes of Rewatchable. I love listening to your favorite scenes and lines as well as newbie theories. Keep up the good work. And Alex Mars is an Aussie.
Awesome. And a couple of things from Twitter. Laura Jurgensmeyer says, I love the little extra snippet she put at the very end of the episodes. Great episode this week, by the way! Exclamation point. Thank you, Laura. I wasn't on it, but thank you on behalf of everyone else.
I think I should give this one back to Caitlin.
I was going to say, Caitlin.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This is from our favorite person whose name I butchered the first time, who says, my vote is don't do Angel concurrent with Buffy rewatch. Those two shows need room to breathe and for the discussions to be separate.
Agreed. We don't all agree on this, but I agree on this. And Kristen?
Tucker Conley at Tucker Ross Con says, he's a Selena. The pup episode isn't bad.
Yeah, and Brittany too.
I quite enjoyed the pup episode. I went into it being terrified that it was going to be, I hate that whole dummy thing, but it ended up being really cool and I liked it. So yeah, I agree.
I think we were pretty positive towards the dummy episode.
Yeah,
actually.
I think you were. You find that there's a lot of cool stuff going on, even if the monster of the week isn't necessarily that, you know, It's maybe a little bit weird. But Gordon has a very different opinion. Brittany, what does Gordon say?
Yeah, Gordon, our friend, Toonie Trapper Man, says, yes, the puppet episode is terrible, but the Oedipus bit is amazing. For the first time ever, I'm using the crying, laughing emoji, and it's true. I will say we ran a poll on Twitter. Well, I ran a poll on Twitter asking if super fans liked the episode more, better, or worse, or about the same of when rewatching it, and a lot of people liked it more.
Mm. Yeah. See,
and that Oedipus bit is gold.
I think that's just the makes up for everything else. Like,
even if you hate it, that part is amazing.
Did you know, this is a fun bit of trivia for you, that Allison Hannigan actually wasn't supposed to run on off stage when she did. That was like something she just added in. And then Nicholas Brendan and Sarah Michelle Gellar was just like, okay. And they stepped closer together and that was all improv. So that was really funny. Just makes it even better. So that's it. Thank you so much for your comments. And please send them in to us because we always enjoy hearing what you guys have to say about the show. Next week on Rewatchable, they are going to be talking about the first two episodes of season two, titled When She Was Bad and Some Assembly Required, which I know that Karen is very, very, very excited to talk about for a very random reason that she'll probably explain to you. Until next time, thank you so much for listening to Rewatchable, and I hope you're enjoying our Buffy rewatch. My name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Grr, arg. Yay, bye. We made it. Bye. We survived season one, and so did Buffy. Phew.
Some close calls.
I know.